basically there's nothing for you to do.
Okay.
Except right. to listen. All right. Now, in the Anapanasati Sutta, step four, or not a step, but item number four, and the point of breathing in long and breathing out long. In fact, the sutta talks about breathing in long and breathing out long, and yet Goenka doesn't talk about it. In fact, in some cases, he even goes so far as to say, don't control the breath, just watch it. Yeah. That's absolutely backwards from the way the sutta talks about it. The sutta talks about it in the sense of taking long, deep breath on an in-breath and long, deep breath on the out-breath. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because we're learning to control the mind. Mm-hmm. And the mind is controlling the breath. And if you just ordinary breathing and not watching very closely and not, let us say, having any stake in the game, not having any dog in the fight, then the mind will wander away very easily. But if you're actually paying attention to what the breath is doing, because you're actually manipulating the breath, then you can stay focused easier.
Right.
All right. The step three is what Goenka spends the most time on. And in the sutta, it talks about investigating the body, to know the body, to have knowledge of the body. And yet he's doing it in a systematic way rather than the way that is taught in the Satipatthana of watch what the body is doing. So if you're body scanning down to the elbows and your knee hurts, he says to go back to the elbows. Mm. Instead of paying attention to the important stuff, he wants you to go in a particular sequence.
Yes. Yeah.
And what we need to do instead is pay attention to what's going on. This is why in the Satipatthana Sutta it talks about grasping, reaching, touching, moving the body. Where are your hands? What kind of facial gestures you have? And you become aware of what the body is doing. If the knee is vibrating, notice the knee is vibrating, jumping up and down, wiggling. Notice that. And the body scanning doesn't teach what we actually need to do. They're more interested in the technique.
Yes.
But even step three is not the point. The point is to relax the body. And so step three is actually to find what tensions, what problems, what darknesses and all of that are in the body so that we can come to the point of relaxing the body. That's the whole point of the Anapanasati Sutta as far as the Kaya Nupassana or the body is concerned.
Hmm.
And so now that I've explained it to you this way, you can say that, wait a minute, Goenka has missed the point.
Yeah. Well, I also feel it when I'm practicing the technique, because I'm like, okay, I'm scanning, I'm observing sensation, I'm trying to be equanimous, but at some point, I feel like I'm just practicing another Anapanasati, but with, instead of the breath, another object, which is the sensations. But then I'm like, but if Vipassana should be the step further, Shamatha, so Anapanasati.
Right, but in fact,
why,
the entire...
Why am I feeling doing the same than Shamatha, you know, somehow?
Well, if you're not relaxed, and in fact, by the time that the students are given the teaching of strong determination and they're not ready for it, they wind up being strongly determined to be in pain.
Yeah.
All right. Strongly determined to hold still when in fact the body is not ready for that.
So
the strong determination settings that Goenka have actually goes in the wrong direction. Because the whole point is to relax the body, to become comfortable, to become easy, because the whole teaching of the Buddha is to come out of dukkha, come out of your dissatisfaction, and there the students are sitting in great dissatisfaction.
Yes.
It is funny. It is. It's downright humorous when you recognize that the much of the teaching of Goenka is downright wrong. Not just because, wrong, but harmfully wrong.
Yeah, because when you think about the middle way of the Buddha that says you shouldn't be in the extreme of being in pain or being in total, let's say, ecstasy or blissful, it should be in the middle. And then in the Goenka, you're like, you should be equanimous with your pain because it rises and at some point it will pass away. Okay, right. And then you have sankharas rising, deep-rooted sankharas rising. And I'm like, yeah, sure, but I know this pain is because I've been sitting for many, many hours. Mm-hmm. And this is not sankhara. This is just like physical pain, which is maybe linked to some...
Well, it is sankhara. And hear how it is. People who are raised in the tropics, in Thailand, in India, they sit on the ground. They sit on the floor. They sit on a mat. In Europe, they sit in chairs. They sit on furniture.
Yes.
And the little babies are grabbed off the floor and put in chairs, even high chairs, to sit at the table with the adults, to where in Tainan, they put the food on the floor and sit down on the floor with it. So your whole life you have spent developing leg muscles in a way that was not designed to sit on the floor. So in fact, it is sankhara. It's the old habits of how the legs are done, and you're not now used to sitting on the floor. And there's no reason for you to be uncomfortable. Here's a point. In some of the meditation retreats that you'll find in Thailand and in other places, they don't sit so long. 30 minutes at the most. And then the students are advised that if there is any leg pain, to stand up, to walk around, to walk it off. Do not sit in pain. And yet Goenka expects you to sit in pain.
That's actually how I learned to practice through Zen, because they do 30 minutes Zazen sitting, and then they would do 30 minutes of walking meditation. And they would go back on sitting and walking, sitting, which for me, I guess it's quite healthy. But yeah, in this Goenka frame, it's just all about being equanimous with your pain. It's okay, it will go away, but at some point, if you don't have any knowledge previously of practice, it's really dangerous, I feel, you know.
Yes, it is. I know of a number of people who can't sit at all because the leg pain is too tough. I even know monks who cannot sit with other monks because they have never learned to sit correctly. By doing a gradual kind of thing. But in fact, it has the same analogy to going to a gym. And the beginner who goes to the gym, the first thing that a good trainer will do is to give him lightweight dumbbells and have reps over and over and over again, short. But what a lot of the students want instead is to go to the dumbbells, the barbells, and try to lift 100 kilos, 100 pounds, more and more, straining themselves, hurting themselves. Why? Because the guys that they admire can do that without recognizing that the guys that they admire for doing that had to start with the simple training.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So in a way, Goenka was taught wrongly because he's trying to give students really, really, you could call it advanced work to do right from the very beginning. And there's no reason for that kind of work at all. No one needs except that they're going to call themselves a bodybuilder, have some competition and that kind of stuff. But you can go to the gym and get healthy just by doing the repetitions over and over again. Yeah. But this is what the real teaching of the Buddha is about. Another point is that Goenka does not spend much time with the Eightfold Noble Path and the Four Noble Truths. Whatever he's talking about, and he talks about equanimous a lot, and yeah. that's not even a good word. It's not even a word that's used in English.
Yeah.
Okay. That what a better word to use is actually balance, which is another word for the middle path. And equanimity, the way that he teaches it and the way the students understand it, is way off there someplace. Oh, you're supposed to have great pain and still be equanimous. Oh, no, the right thing to do is to see what pain is and find out a way to avoid it and then be happy that you could get out of it.
Yeah.
To nourish the body. When the body is sore and hurting, take care of it. And he's talking about it in a completely different method. And the completely different method actually then doesn't bring about the middle path. If you teach extremes, people are going to live in extremes. And if you've noticed the students who are gathered around and do the, let us say, the volunteer work and all of that, you don't find them happy. You didn't. In fact, I did not find Goenka a happy old man. He was ferocious.
Yeah.
So he didn't even get out of the Dhamma what the Buddha was trying to point out. That the Eightfold Noble Path is basically to see the unwholesomeness and make a change. The word sati means to remember, to wake up, to take a look, and that looking then is a discriminatory looking to see what needs to be changed, and then we change it. So if the thoughts are unwholesome, oh, my leg hurts, Goenka wants you to just sit there with those unwholesome thoughts, oh, my leg hurts, hoping that equanimity will come by someday. And that, oh, my leg hurts means let me put the leg in a comfortable position. Because if the body is comfortable, then the mind can become comfortable, and then the feelings become comfortable. But if the body is in pain, the mind is in pain, and the feelings are in pain. There's not much progress of the Buddha there. You will wind up creating dukkha rather than eliminating it. Now, there is another sutta that's interesting to note. In fact, it's got a point to it later on that I'll get to. And that is, the sutta is number 22 in the Majjhima Nikaya, and it is named the Simile of the Snake.
Okay.
Now, basically what the Simile of the Snake is about is the Buddha teaches that the correct way to catch a snake is to have a long stick that has a little fork in it. And you pin the head of the snake down with that fork so that you immobilize the snake right at the head. Then, by pushing the face of the snake, pushing his throat down in the dirt, you can then pick up the snake and hold it in a way so that the mouth is not open. If the mouth of the snake is open and you're holding him by the neck, especially a cobra, can turn right around and bite you on the hand. So you have to catch the snake in a way so that he cannot bite, and the only way to do that is by having the mouth of the snake closed. This is the teaching of the Dhamma. If you grasp the Dhamma in the wrong way, it's going to create dukkha, not eliminate it. And you might have heard some places, this is in the Dhammapada and other places, that the teaching of the Buddha is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. Well, what's good about strong determination sittings?
It might, I
it's
think
painful.
Yeah. And if you succeed somehow, it's more like a pride of, oh, I succeed.
For pride, exactly. Yeah. And so it actually builds ego rather than helping one eliminate the self. It builds pride, it builds tolerance for pain, which means that you bring in pain. The teaching of the Buddha did never talk about it like that. All right, so the real point of the teaching of the Buddha from the simile of the snake, in that same sutta, he says that both formerly and now, I only teach one thing. The whole teaching of the Buddha can be summed up in three words. Dukkha, dukkha nirodha, which means dissatisfaction can cease. Stop the dissatisfaction. Now, a lot of the people who take Goenka retreats and other kind of meditations, they have the idea that it's a long process. Especially when they're not practicing to have it good immediately in the beginning, and good immediately in the middle, and then eventually a long-term good. What instead they do is they practice in a method where the snake of the Dhamma bites them, and they create more dukkha. And so people get the idea that the correct way of practice is dukkha, see the dukkha, recognize the dukkha, see how this dukkha is created, see that it creates from this way to that way, and this dukkha is associated with that dukkha, and we go right down the dukkha rat hole. And it may be years where we're staying in a dukkha rat hole. All right, that's not the teaching of the Buddha at all. The teaching of the Buddha is dukkha, dukkha nirodha, which means see the dukkha, get good at seeing dukkha, so you come out of it immediately, right away. See your dissatisfactions and stop it right now. And this is the practice of Anapanasati, to see the discomforts in the body and relax those discomforts, to see the unwholesomeness in the mind and make a change so that the mind is more wholesome. Right now, to see that the feelings of anxiety, tensions, worry, frustration, anger, stress, all of that can be immediately worked with. If the body is comfortable, the mind is comfortable, then the feelings will become comfortable. But if the body is under stress or the mind is under stress, then the feelings are going to continue to be under stress. And so the Eightfold Noble Path comes this way, is to practice to be able to wake up. That's the sati, to really wake up and look at what's going on. That's the ditti, the right noble view. It's not a viewpoint or an attitude or a right way of looking. Like a world view or a point of view is not what we're talking about here. That's ordinary view. The word view here, right, noble view, is actually looking. It's a verb. It's an investigation or an investigating. Here's an example with the word investigation and investigating. Is that an investigation is often a bunch of paper in a folder sitting in somebody's drawer in a desk. That was an investigation. But in order to get the investigation, they had to do the investigating. They had to actually see what was there. And this is what we can do. And we do this with the discernment of, is what I'm doing right now, is thinking right now, is that dukkha or is it not? And if it is dukkha, change it, so that it's not. And so we begin to have thoughts of everything is okay, everything is fine. But if we have thoughts of, oh, my knee hurts, that's dukkha. But thoughts of, oh, the leg is giving me a message. Let's pay attention to what the leg is saying. Let's heed the messages. If the pain is in, if the leg is in pain, do something about it. If the tooth is in pain, do something about it. If the hip hurts, do something about it. If the neck hurts, do something about it, like hold the neck still. Like a broken arm. That's why they put the broken arm, they put it in first a cast, and then they put it into a sling. And yet most kids who have a broken arm, they still continue to use their hand, and then the arm doesn't heal well. The reason that we put it in a sling and put it into a cast is so the kid can hold the hand still and let the healing process occur. But that's not the strong determination sitting. The strong determination sitting is to hold it still even when that's painful. So the Buddha is all about removing pain. And Goenka and many other meditation systems is all about learning to have pain and tolerate it.
Yeah.
And the teaching of the Buddha is to stop having pain, to listen to what the body says and do what you need to do to let the body heal. This is, again, a very good example of the simile of the snake. A lot of people practice Dhamma thinking that what I need to do is let these snakes bite me and somehow survive. And the right way to do it is that if you got to pick up a snake because it's dangerous in your neighborhood, you pick it up correctly so that it doesn't bite you, hold it so that it cannot bite you, and then deal with it as you would
with a cobra.
Right. Grab it not just by the throat, but grab it high on the throat. Grab it right behind the head so that you can have your thumb right on its head. You hold it really, really high. I've seen on YouTube, I've seen in Florida, for some reason, it was a fad to have a snake as a pet. But when the cobra, or excuse me, the python started getting big, they left them free. And now they've got a great big python problem in Florida. And so the guys go out trying to catch the snake. And they'll grab it, but they'll grab it with its mouth open by the throat or the neck while the snake's mouth is still open. That's very dangerous. They got to watch that head every second because that snake can move his neck around so that he can bite. So this is the whole point about the Dhamma is that you've got to grab it correctly. And the correct way of doing it is so that it's good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. It doesn't bite you. But the way that Goenka teaches, it bites. The Dhamma bites. It will bite you if you practice it wrongly. And so basically, this is a big change model. And the change is right there in the Eightfold Noble Path, under the label of right noble effort. So what is effort? Right noble effort is the least amount of effort to actually get the job done. Now for beginners, it takes more effort. It takes more effort because they're not used to taking the right effort. Part of the reason it takes more effort is because they're not watching, and so the dukkha will roll on until they finally catch the dukkha. And then they have to make a change by unraveling it. But you get very good at it, to wake up, look at it, see that this is dukkha immediately, and make a change. To change it from the unwholesome thought of, oh, my leg hurts, into let me soothe the leg, let me reposition the leg, let me come out of pain and deal with the leg correctly. Let's stretch the leg, let's stretch the mind, and the kind of thoughts that we're going to have would be thoughts of, wow, this is nice. Wow, the leg doesn't hurt. Wow, everything is okay. No place to go, nothing to do, everything is easy, everything is free from pain. And that's the real training, is to change our attitude from, this is tough, but I can do it somehow, into, dang, this is easy. So we change it from tough, hard to do, but I'm resilient and maybe I can do it if I train hard enough, into changing that whole mental attitude to make it easy. Easy in the beginning, easy in the middle, and easy in the end. So that we could feel safe and secure and comfortable. And by feeling safe, secure, and comfortable, we can begin to feel satisfied. Now, safe, secure, comfortable, and satisfied actually has a Pali name to it. It's called sukha. And the sukha in the Pali is exactly opposite of the word dukkha in the Pali. The same thing is true in the Thai language, sukh and duk. And the same thing is true in the Gujarati language, because I've heard it had a student whose parents were Gujarati, and they spoke Gujarati, and for sure in Gujarati, dukkhi and sukhi are opposites. So if you could get your mind right now, the first day you practice, if you can get the mind into a state of sukha, get the mind relaxed and feel free and comfortable and satisfied that this is all we need right now, guess what? Right then and there, you're free from dukkha. This is what the teaching is dukkha, dukkha, nirodha. Come out of your dissatisfaction into a state of satisfaction. And we do that by changing the way that the mind works. We change it by changing the kind of language that we use. We change it because we're changing the body and the body's posture to make it comfortable. And then all of that together will help change the feeling from the being the attitude of a victim and the feeling of, oh, this is hard, into the feeling of being safe, secure, comfortable, satisfied. And then we take on the feeling of being a winner, being okay, changing our attitude from being a victim into being a champion, to being the boss of your own life, to become an emperor of your own pile of dirt. And it can be done, but we have to practice it over and over and over again. Why? Because the old unwholesome thoughts, the all unwholesome feelings will come back. Can you catch it? Can you see it? Can you change it right then and there? This is the teaching of the Buddha. It's specified right there in the suttas. For some reason, people read the suttas, they read right past it. They don't understand that this is an immediate practice to see those unwholesome thoughts and change them right now.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I kind of got caught in what you were saying in the videos, because through what I've been reading, through many books, you know, Mahayana Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, it's all about this process, long process of getting to some certain point, and you should expect something, yeah, magical, like you were talking about the magic of Buddhism, but there's no such thing. It's just simple rest, watching, and what are you doing with what's going on?
Enjoying your life, learning to enjoy the life this particular moment. It's not a long-term process, it's an immediate process, but you have to keep doing it over and over again. The long-term is just a series of right here, right nows. And all you've got is right here, right now. What's your choice? Are you going to choose to feel the way that you want to feel, or are you going to choose to feel the way that you're in the habit of feeling? Your choice. But you don't have a choice if you're not watching, if you don't know.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point of looking. If you look at the dukkha, you could see it as dukkha and then change it. Right here, right now. Start having wholesome thoughts. The wholesome thought would be no place to go, nothing to do. Wow, I could just relax. I could just relax. And so we relax the body by doing long, deep breaths like this. Just relax. Everything is okay. Everything is fine.
Yeah, the thing that you're saying, like when you see some unwholesome thoughts, like dukkhas, and you're like, haha, I see you. And I actually tried this when I would see something. And it was funny because usually what I learn, it's like you shouldn't talk in yourself when you see something. It shouldn't be like, haha, I see you, just observe and let it go somehow. But since I try this way of, oh, I see, and then I'm like, oh, okay, I see, and then it goes away. Like, I'm like, okay, let it go. It's fine, you know? But this is not taught
in any way. But that's
the
change. The letting it go is a change. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the right noble effort. It's, never mind. Let it go.
But the thing is, I would already do this without creating a sentence in my head, you know? But I think for most of people, it would be like helpful to just be okay by saying in your mind, like, oh, I see it, it's fine, let it go. Instead, it's just about you should just observe and for somehow let it go, but you cannot say any word in your head, you know?
That's another fallacy. You do not have the skills to stop your mind.
Yeah.
Just like a great big ship, like a big cruise liner or a big cargo ship or a big naval vessel, or a military, an aircraft carrier, none of those have brakes. Not one big ship has brakes. What kind of brakes would they have if they had brakes? Right? What you need to learn to do to pilot that big ship is to learn how to look in advance to see where it's going and then steer it to avoid. To steer it a little bit over here and a little bit over there. Okay? And this is an important point, that this is what we're doing with right noble effort. We're not trying to stop the mind or make it let go. We're just redirecting it. Like, oh, I don't need that right now. I'm okay right now. Everything is all right right now. We begin to steer the ship to a wholesome place. So we have words like, oh, never mind. I can handle that. Everything is okay. But we need to also do it with the body, because the body is screaming about the pain. And the answer to that is adjust the body, adjust your mind, adjust your feelings, and eventually we'll adjust our attitude from being a victim to where all life is tough or all I need help into easy peasy, got it made, got no problems at all. Everything is all right, everything is fine. And so we can begin to do it that way. That's the good in the beginning. And we keep doing that over and over again, applying the mind to the wholesome and then sustaining it on the wholesome. Applying, sustaining.
Yeah.
And then the mind's thought patterns will begin to change. The habits will begin to change. Because we keep doing it over and over again. Just like muscles will build up. Well, you're getting muscles built up in the brain just by having those wholesome thoughts. I could do this. I could do this. Everything's okay. Got no worries. Got no problems. Everything is all right. No problem. No worries. And when somebody is holding the snake the wrong way, they got to watch that snake every second. But if you're holding it correctly and you know you've got it correctly, the snake can't even squirm. It becomes docile also. So we have to make sure that we're casting the Dhamma safely. And once we do, we can easily watch it. So this is the practice. We do that over and over again, right? Noble effort. Hmm. These three things run in circle around each other. They run in circle around each other in the sense that sati helps us to look. To remember to look helps us to look. To looking helps us to see. And the seeing then will tell us what needs to be done. So the changes. And then practicing the changes over and over again and practicing sati and practicing the looking, they begin to work together as a team. They run and circle around each other is the way that it's talked about in the sutras, and the skills develop together to remember to take a look and to make a change, to remember to take a look and to make a change, to look at the thoughts. What we used to think were wholesome now begin to look unwholesome. So we begin to change even the wholesome thoughts to make them even more wholesome.
Hmm. I never heard of it, even this wholesomeness to get it even more wholesome. Yeah. Well, maybe yes, I did in the Mahayana teaching, but it's not said this the same way, I guess. It's not as simple. Yeah. And practical.
All right. Well, let's bring this talk to a close. And you can learn to go practice a bit. Are you going to call me back?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, at some point.
Okay. I would recommend about a week. Go practice about a week. Get it going and then call back again and we can go a little bit deeper. A little bit more sophisticated. Mm. Once you begin to get those, we can learn to apply those skills.
Mm. All right.
So one of the most important things is to come out of the wrong practice that you've been practicing with Goenka and start in having correct, wholesome practice.
Well, the one thing is that the practice that I started with Goenka is like half of my practice, because for me Anapanasati was always my main practice. The Vipassana technique that I learned is kind of new for me.
But well, guess what? We're doing Vipassana.
Looking at what
it is and making a change. What's the point of Vipassana? What do you think does it mean?
No, that's the thing that I get confused, because for me, there was like, yeah, but at some point I feel in Anapanasati, I'm just doing the same than with the Vipassana technique. But the Vipassana technique is so like over exaggerated, I guess.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
No,
they expect too much of it. And not only that, but what's the point of having an insight if you don't make a change?
So you wind
up having same old stupid insights over and over again, and you never get anywhere. You're looking for a great big giant insight, and then maybe things will change. The only thing that's going to change is your behavior about making decisions to make a change. That you could put your hand in the fire and find out that it's a big insight to find out that fire is hot. And then you put your hand right back in the fire again, and it's hot again. Two
and
insights.
Big insights.
Then you put your hand right back in the fire again, and now you've got three insights that the fire is hot. What's the point? Yeah. There's no education in the second kick of a mule, they say. There's no education in the second burning of your hand. If you're learning it the first time. So insight is basically the point that it takes to make an actual change.
And not all this mystical practice that you can read in Mahayana or in Theravada. So would you advise me just to keep practicing like 15-minute session? Multiple times a day.
But I recommend it doing it often during the day.
Six
or eight times a day.
Because
you're out traveling, you've got nothing, you've got no job So
exactly.
Do it when you wake up, do it when you go to sleep, doing it while you're eating, doing it while you're traveling, doing it while you're on the bicycle, doing it while you're sitting.
Yeah, every time. Every time.
Every time you remember.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And the more you do it, the more often you'll remember.
Mm. Right.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. We'll see you later.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
See Skype too. Join the groups.
Yeah.
We got Sangha groups. Yeah. Okay. Great.
I will.
We'll see you. Bye bye.
All right. Take care.